This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Things are really changing. Like what we were talking about in terms of the solar of 2, 3, 5 years ago is completely different now.
The signs of solar power becoming a truly self-sustaining industry are manifold. Solar manufacturing costs fell by between 70 and 80% from 2007 to 2012, while at the same time, the efficiency rates of solar panels continued to improve. But this success has also led to pushback from many of our nation's utilities. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak again to the Executive Director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning, to discuss some of the policies that have helped the solar explosion, how public utilities are reacting to the success of solar in very different ways, and what steps are being taken to start getting solar to the millions of Americans who aren't homeowners. I want to welcome back to the show the Executive Director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. Adam, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
For our listeners who missed our first conversation last year, give us a quick recap of what Vote Solar's mission is.
Thank you. So we're a national nonprofit public advocacy organization working to bring solar energy into the mainstream. So we principally focus on state-level policy, removing the barriers and putting into place the policies necessary to, again, create solar markets. So you look at energy policy, really, frankly, we get what we ask for. And a lot of this is really just about providing access and growing scale. And these are the big barriers to solar development.
So let's talk about some of the policies that are working and where we see some of the shining examples of success of the solar industry since we spoke last in the last year or so.
So when we look at solar, there's what's one of the most amazing things about solar technology is that it is really scalable. So you can have small scale solar installations on your rooftop generating electricity for your own usage. And for that, we call that sort of retail solar markets, again, where you're generating for your own usage instead of buying electricity from the utility. Alternatively, in addition, solar can be a wholesale generating resource where you have much larger installations that are generating for sale to a utility for further redistribution to the utility's customer. So in effect, you have different policies that enable and grow different outcomes for different stakeholders. So let's first look at some of the wholesale side. So in California, we have something called a renewable portfolio standard. It requires utilities to increase the amount of renewable energy that they purchase and generate and provide to their customers. And because of this policy, it has really helped bring this technology to scale and bring down costs tremendously. So early days of this, around the mid-2000s, you know, solar was at a premium over the fossil fuel or other alternatives for generating. Now, the state of California is buying tremendous amounts of solar below the cost of other alternatives. And this isn't just in California. We're seeing this type of new ability to, again, go solar, go emission-free generation below the cost of brown polluting power. So Texas, the home of plenty of coal plants, you've seen the city of Austin has a municipal utility. They recently went out for a request for bids for a small amount of solar, like 30 megawatts. The prices that came back were so good that they upped their order to 150 megawatts. And now this is a non-trivial amount of solar. Those prices were around 5 cents per kilowatt hour, fixed and guaranteed over 25 years. This is half the cost of building a new coal plant and well under the cost of building a new natural gas plant. probably a third of the cost of building a new nuclear plant. So this age of having to sacrifice in order to go renewable is long past. It's over.
So maybe you can give us some examples of, maybe on a state-by-state basis, of success stories despite resistance from deeply entrenched parties.
The regulated utility business model that we operate under here is that we take companies that put zero value upon having a livable planet, and then we give them a monopoly on our energy choices. And the ability to circumvent that, to put solar on your roof and generate your own electricity, is a huge challenge to that arrangement. And frankly, that's for the good. Like, you know, if we don't change one of those factors, it means that the planet fries. So utilities are resisting this ability for people to generate their own power. They're resisting in ways of trying to get rid of access to the grid and get rid of your ability to get fair value for your own generation. So one of the most important enabling policies for allowing this proliferation of distributed generation, customer choice, is a policy we call net metering, which says that if you're generating more electricity than you are using at any one point in time, you feed it back into the grid and you get fair value for it. Most of the time you're generating and you're using it at the same time, that's all fine, it's behind the meter. Utilities are trying to put up barriers to allowing people to get, you know, fair value for what they feed back into the grid. The single biggest key in the fight against that is the fact that people want to see this change. You pull Americans from the reddest state to the bluest state, and there is a commonality. You see majorities to supermajorities of Americans that want to see a transition to renewable energy, and they want to see people, they are compelled by this idea that you have access to generating your own power. You don't have to take what the utility is making, deciding that you should take, that you should be able to choose your own. So we work to try to translate that into actual political power. And I'll give you an example in Colorado, where the local utility was trying to put up some barriers to block people from generating their own power and giving them fair value for that. We had we got 30,000 signatures on petitions that we delivered to the utility. We had rallies in front of the in front of the utility headquarters. Then then we also worked with the regulators and made our case on the merits with the analyses about how when people generate their own power, they're actually reducing costs for other ratepayers, and in defense of the policies that allow this to happen. Finally, went on the local public radio station and had a debate with the local utility. And at the end of it, the utility representative connected with our colleague who was on the radio with him and just said, look, we can't keep this bleeding up. We have to come to an accommodation. We have to settle it out. So it was putting this pressure on, applying, you know, solar means democracy and environmental decision making, and our role as the Vote Solar Initiative, our organization, tries to translate that public sentiment into actual political power in defense of the actual policy changes that we need in order to make this all happen. And this Colorado campaign was a perfect example of one way that that can happen.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. The history of net metering, if we can take a step back, how did it kind of get introduced? Were the utilities kicking and screaming, or were they accepting of it?
That's a great question. So, you know, we, amongst other organizations, worked hard over the last decade in order to implement some of these policies like net metering that allow people to generate their own electricity with rooftop solar. And I would say, you know, the story is different in different places. Here in California, you know, I have a on the wall of my office, I've got a copy of an ad that we ran in the full page ad that we ran in the paper in 2002, when this net metering was capped at 0.1%, and the utilities were trying to kill it then. And we were able to, again, rally popular support and get the regulators to increase that cap.
0.1% on total
of total system peak capacity.
To put that in perspective, what is like Georgia doing, do you think, or California?
Well, so this was California back then. I mean, now we're at about 5%. So
the concept of 0.1% is absurd.
Just to say they've been trying hard to try to prevent this from happening for a long time. Other states, we've been able, frankly, I think utilities, let's put it this way, their general disregard for solar's ability to ever really grow to be much of a player in our energy landscape allowed some policies to slip through, people thinking that it would never actually be used. So utilities, you know, allowed these policies to come into place. And that now that, you know, our entire premise is that if you build scale in this industry, you bring down costs. Now that that's actually happened, like the cost of solar panels has come down over 80% since 2008, fundamentally transforming the ability of solar to really scale in this country. Now that that is actually happening, utilities are belatedly resisting the spread of solar in many instances. I'd also just point out that this isn't actually uniform across the United States. That, you know, our mantra here is that you know, utilities, frankly, fundamentally need to change their business model to view their customers as partners in the effort of serving, providing grid services and having clean, reliable power that doesn't, you know, kill the earth and kill their customers. And there are places, for example, in Vermont, Green Mountain Power sponsored legislation this year to tremendously raise the cap on allowing people to go solar and generate their own power with solar energy. So in partnership with the utility, and their CEO, Mary Powell, was very clear about, you know, they view customer-owned solar as a asset, as a partnership to be encouraged, not as actions to be clamped down upon. So increasingly, we're starting to get a bifurcation amongst some utilities that are going to be stuck and dig their heels into the old ways, and others that are going to be looking at, okay, this is actually a good thing. How can we work together to come up with a commonly beneficial outcome? And we like to encourage that as well.
Let the sun shine in my life once more. Let my arms hold the one I adore. Break my chains and set me free. Bring my baby back to me. Let the sun shine in my life once more.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. So with a Green Mountain Power in Vermont, how does solar benefit their bottom line?
You know, they've chosen to see that when people start generating their own power, what happens is that they have to invest less in building new generation capacity. So it may not benefit their bottom line immediately because they make more money on getting to build, you know, new power plants. But what it does is it actually reduces costs for all of their customers. And in a regulated environment, you know, they can go to their regulators and readjust the way that they are regulated and essentially capture their revenues in a way that having to sell less power
doesn't mean that they go that they are negatively impacted. So they've, again, chosen to accept this idea that if people are generating their own power, reduced costs is for everybody as a good thing. And, you know, their utilities get a monopoly based upon this idea that they get a monopoly in return for serving the public good. And some take that to heart and some don't. Green Mountain Power has taken that to heart.
Adam, let's turn to some of the battleground states for solar. Arizona comes to mind. It's been very successful in terms of installation, and that's caused quite a lot of consternation from the public utility in Arizona. But net metering, we get back to this net metering issue that seems to be at the core of the Arizona utilities beef. Is that fair to say?
So, you know, sometimes tremendous success brings a whole new suite of problems along. And that is exactly what happened in Arizona, where, you know, awesome sunshine down there. It really makes sense for solar. The demand is often driven by the need for air conditioning, which is a solar related, correlated event. And so what you saw there is a tremendous growth in the solar industry. Initially, there were incentives for people to put solar on the rooftops. Those are basically gone. What we're looking at as right now, people can generate their own power in Arizona with rooftop solar cheaper than they can buy from the utility. The utility is looking at this and they see future revenue loss. They see a challenge to their monopoly under this. And so they came up with some proposals to change this. Essentially, they tried to force a change where people would not be able to generate their own power, have to sell it to the utility at hugely discounted rates, essentially at the same brown power rate, or that they would pay a monthly fee so that the for essentially a tax for going solar. There are huge amount of conflict over this, and there is an interim sort of solution which, you know, the utilities asked for a monthly fee of between $50 and $100 a month per solar customer. And the regulators came out with a decision that put it at about $5 a month.
10 times less than what they were asking.
10 times less than what was asked for. So we will call that a win.
I mean, $50 a month pretty much could destroy that industry in Arizona, I would imagine.
It would absolutely crush the incentive to go solar. Why generate your own power if you're still going to have to pay this tax to the utility regardless?
So what makes the Arizona Corporation Commission approach net metering as a threat while Green Mountain Power in Vermont has embraced it?
It's a great question. And I think, in Arizona, let's be clear, the Corporation Commission, frankly, sided with the solar supporters over what the utilities were asking for. And that was, we thank them for standing strong for solar. That was a great it was a great outcome. And again, I think that was a big part of that win is that Arizonans really do want to see this transition to renewable energy. So across the country, all politics is local. There are no cookie cutter approaches in each individual place. Every place that we run campaigns, you have to understand the local personalities, the local power bases, the local motivations.
Beyond the political infighting over net metering, what's the business case from both perspectives?
What we're looking at is a fundamental transformation of how the utility businesses are operated. And there are places that are embracing change and are interested and captivated by what else is possible and how we can take this new technology and make people's lives better. And then there are others that, you know, that look at change is hard and difficult and painful, and it really is. So if you look at, you know, utility regulators, I get this palpable sense that some worked hard to, you know, have the governor appoint them as this to this position as this job. And they thought that essentially you know, they were able to continue with what they knew, a very simple monopoly that made all the decisions, and all you had to do was figure out how much, frankly, revenue they should be allocated, how much money returns that they should make.
So the status quo was easy for their jobs.
The status quo is a much easier job. There are others who look at, you know what, like a distributed grid, not just large central station plants, but a distributed grid provides a whole lot more resiliency. It will be, and not only makes the grid stronger, but frankly, by looking at customers as also participants, many more new and interesting things can happen. And it's not just solar that's doing this. Let me give you an example with electric vehicles. So this is a new technology for the grid, and there will be hundreds of thousands and soon millions of really large batteries connected to the grid. Now, either this could end up with a situation where we need to build a lot more new generating capacity in order to serve this new source of load, or if we are smart about using policy, we can have a situation where your electric vehicle with its big battery also helps integrate wind and solar onto the grid, and you can get paid for that.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. At what point, Adam, do we start seeing a real transformation from the utilities perspective and not just building power plants, but really investing in a renewable grid?
I would say here in California, we are currently on track to be on an energy basis over 10% solar by 2020.
And that's not just residential people doing it themselves. That's PG&E buying into it.
Exactly. That's PG&E. That's Southern California Edison. That is San Diego Gas and Electric buying the power under long-term power purchase arrangements with larger solar installations throughout the state. So that is a huge transformation, going from essentially an industry that didn't exist for all intents and purposes, a decade ago, to serving such a tremendous amount of peak demand here in California is huge. And it's not just in California. We're seeing eye-opening changes in places where we just haven't had a whole lot of renewables at all anymore. One of the most exciting things that I see going on right now is in, of all places, Georgia. So Georgia Power is a Southern company. They're one of the top two or three largest carbon dioxide emitters in the United States. They have really nothing in the way of renewables going on. In 2012, Georgia had 8 megawatts of solar. By 2016, they will have 800 megawatts of solar. And all of that is being purchased below the utility's avoided cost. So there's something fundamentally changing. I mean, that came about because, believe it or not, a true blue Tea Party revolution of local activists that are fired up about the utility monopoly making all of their energy choices and not having access to solar. If you look for quotes from the head of the one of the heads of the Georgia Public Service Commission, this guy named Bubba McDonald. I mean, he is as Southern as it gets. He's as Georgia as it gets, and he and his colleagues have recognized that solar has something fundamentally important to Georgia's grid, and they approach it through a libertarian perspective. This is about freedom from utilities monopoly. This is about energy independence. This is about having diversity of choices. These are really core conservative values that they have followed in order to, and it led them to a solar solution. It's really heartening and amazing to see. So things are really changing. Like what we were talking about in terms of the solar of 2, 3, 5 years ago is completely different now in terms of the new low costs and the ability for Americans of any stripe to find their way to see the importance of a solar solution.
Now, I think we may have discussed this last time we talked, Adam, but frequent listeners of Sea Change Radio will know this is something I feel almost contractually obligated to ask when we talk about solar. I'm a renter, and a lot of people here in San Francisco are renters because of the cost of home ownership. What's happened since we spoke last in terms of trying to break down that barrier where a third of American residents are kind of shut out of the discussion of being able to get on board with solar?
Oh, excellent question. And so to answer that, we've invested heavily in some new models. We call it shared solar or shared renewables. And instead of having a solar system on your roof that generates your own power, this would allow you to buy a part, invest in a community offsite installation, and then have that power actually be credited to your electricity bill. You get the economic benefit of choosing to go with solar. So in California last year, SB 43 was passed. We're in the implementation part of this before the regulatory body to develop an actual program. There are efforts throughout the country to do the same. There are some pilots throughout the country, Washington, D.C., and in Colorado as well. So if you think about this, if you look at the companies that have commitments to 100% renewable energy, Facebook, Apple, Google, Salesforce, there's a bunch of these really large, really quickly growing tech companies. They have, again, commitments to using 100% renewable energy, and they will not all be able to do this on site. They're building really large data centers. And so what happens is when these companies want to build a new data center, they go to a state and they say, we would love to invest heavily in here, but we need to have access to clean energy. And what they do is they end up setting up similar arrangements like this. And so our saying is what's good for the Google is good for the Gander. They will help pilot in many places these types of arrangements where you can, again, break the utility monopoly over energy choices, be able to fix your energy costs into lower cost long-term renewable energy contracts, and individuals would be able to buy into, get a piece of a larger solar or wind farm. It doesn't have to be on your roof. Instead of just accepting the mix that the utility chooses for you, you'll be able to, the hope and the dream here is that you'll be able to choose, again, a community solar farm or community wind farm and invest in it and then have the benefit of investing in that reflected on your utility bill.
He's the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. Thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Oh, really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Martin Medeski and Wood, Charles Brown, and the Rolling Stones. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidioedu.org.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.